Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening and welcome to One Legacy Works. I'm Paul Smith, your host, and tonight's topic, we're going to be speaking on love.
Is it getting better? Do you feel the same? Will it make it easier on you now? You got someone to blame. You say, won't love, won't last when it's one need in the night. Won't love, forget the shame.
Studio with me this evening, I have my beautiful and adoring wife, Adriana Smith.
Hi, everyone. Lovely to be here.
Well, I'm excited about this subject because, you know, from my own past history, I live perhaps two-thirds of the life that I've lived, thinking I knew what love was, only to discover that I didn't even skim the surface of what it actually meant. In the early stages of having a new look at that word, I adopted a philosophy which was be love, in other words, personify it, which was a lot more of a daunting task than easier said than done. Because there's many situations in the world where trying to exhibit love, especially when you're faced up with negative experiences around you, but it's manageable. And it redefines everything. So for me, the word means a lot. It's something I've written about a lot, and I enjoy writing about. But I wanted to ask you, what's your feelings on the word love? What does it mean to you?
Well, I think it's what we are born into. I think that in our earliest experiences in life, we were a part of well-being. So to me, as we become adults, we assign this label of love, but every infant knows what that state of being is without it having to be introduced. So it's to me feeling a part of a whole and feeling like you belong and feeling accepted and I guess that's why I use the word well-being, because that encompasses all of it to me.
Well, it's a good word for you, because I spend a lot of time watching you. And one of the things that I notice quite a bit is that you spend a lot of time in nature. In other words, if you want to tap into well-being, that's where you go.
Yeah. I need to do that, because it's not only grounding, but it's the one place where I can be that I feel I have a refuge from thoughts, actually. Normally, the mind, for me, tends to move very quickly. And when I'm in nature, I remember that state that I was just mentioning where I feel I'm a part of a greater whole, and I feel that I belong, and I feel complete and utter acceptance.
Well, if I spend time going into either a city or a town, I know there's a lot of people who have love on their mind, and love is what drives nearly everything. And yet, I don't see love exhibited when I'm walking around places that have a lot of people in it. I actually see the opposite, which is I see a lot of negatively charged experiences or drained people or people that are frustrated or rushing from A to B. Why is it that in a world where love is so obvious, so we're speaking about how obvious it is in nature, it's not so obvious in our lives, yet it's that one thing that drives us?
Well, I think that people... And this has been my observation, is that people reach for love outside themselves, forgetting that that's what they were a part of and that it was something that came from within their sense of self. So there was a time in our lives where we had no separation between the experience of love and the total sense of well-being and who we are. We identified with that as infants. And that sense of separation happened over time because it became conditioned. Our parents and first family tribe introduced conditions. And over time, we came to believe that we had to do certain things to meet those conditions in order to acquire a love that could only exist outside. But I think that it's an illusion, first of all. And maybe the way to refer to it is, it's a deceptive concept. but I think that it leads to manipulation. And I think at the end of the day, the games that we see people playing all around in our social circles are not so much about love, but an idea that we cling to of what love, not convinced that it really represents true love, unconditional love.
Well, it's interesting because, you know, you mentioned children, and I have a little bit of a philosophy that the word love can be redefined. In other words, love can be redefined. And something, you know, that struck into my mind while you were speaking is that as a child, if you get spoken to about, oh, you're in love with that person over there or that girl over there or that boy over there, the tendency when you are young is to go, not my kind of thing at all. And yet, at the same time, the parents' love is of utmost importance. In other words, it's what they're seeking the whole time. And so in that illustration, there's a difference in the word love, the perception of it. As a child grows up for that companionship, and that personal companionship, and so then love becomes a driving force. I have a teenage daughter, and you know, from the age of 13, she kind of got tuned into just wanting that companionship, that love, you know, looking for the boy. And it was what drove her. It was like the most important thing. And she would wake up morning, noon, and night in pursuit of that. And yet at the same time, accepting the love that she has for me. So you know, again, that's redefined, because then it's separated into two different categories of love. What's your thinking around this, being able to segment love? In other words, if we have to define love, is there a way to define love, or is it so multifaceted that you can't label it to one thing?
Well, you know, I think that's part of what makes life so interesting and wonderful, is that there's different ways of expressing love. I think what you're referring to is falling in love. And I can remember as a little girl, a funny story of, you know, going through that phase of being boy crazy and all of that, but time when I was just first becoming aware that the music played on the radio, how much of it was about love songs, was about falling in love. As a little girl, maybe preteens, I'm thinking, those must have been those years. And I remember being frustrated because in my mind at the time I was thinking, what's wrong with these people? Why all of a sudden are folks obsessed with, you know, falling in love with each other? What's wrong with the world? Because to my mind at the time, in my experience, it was like the world was just fine the way it was before. And then it seemed like overnight, everything that everyone was talking about, you know, definitely in music and in stories, in movies, it seemed that everyone was obsessed with getting romantic love. So it took me a while to reach that stage of, you know, wanting to socialize with boys. But unlike our girls nowadays, where we transition through those times quickly, but falling in love to me is about discovery, and it's about adoring the discovery. And oftentimes, it's so rewarding because you get to see yourself mirrored, or maybe the best parts of yourself mirrored in the person that you adore. And I think it's a wonderful experience. And I have had that experience oftentimes in life, and I don't think there's a wrong way to go about it. But I don't think it is the same as holding unconditional love for someone, and which to me is a greater and a core love. It's a way of connecting on a soul level. So the experience of falling in love to me is absolutely wonderful, and you and I share that. And we get to reinvent that, actually, in different ways, because we get to rediscover surprises about one another and things that we adore about each other. And I just learned that Paul has a technique of tapping just now. It gets him in a mindset when he's getting ready to die, I didn't know about. And I've known this man for many years. So, you know, surprises exist all the time.
Yeah, you can thank Dr. Oz for that one. unconditional love. That's what I believe, you know, children see love as. It's mm-hmm. unconditional. In other words, there isn't a condition attached to it. A human trait is the need for acceptance, which means as a child, often, you know, we want to be accepted for who we are, and we want to be seen and given attention to. So because that way, when someone's focusing their attention on us, we feel that love. So number one, what I think is really important is that we were born into a shared environment, and being part of that shared environment is to have people look in the same direction as you. You know, as kids, it's having the parents look in the direction of what it is that you're doing and approve of it. So when you're learning how to ride a bike, it's as simple as, hey, look at me, Mom. Hey, look at me, Dad. Look at what I'm doing, and look how great I am. And there's a wonderful thing in there, because it's about self-worth, it's about discovery, it's about evolutionary growth. You have that from the time you're an infant, as you're growing up, you're discovering more and more about you and learning how to tap into your own potential. And it's all about the dream. Later on in life, kind of shifts a little bit. Because you get out of that learning phase, you get out of that self-centered phase of looking at life, and you start looking at life from other people's points of view. So we're going to break to a short song, and after that break, we're going to be speaking about some of the silly things that are on in love.
To dance, I know that there's a chance you won't be leaving with me. Then afterwards we drop into a quiet little place and have a drink or two. And then I go and spoil it all by saying something stupid like I love you. I can see it in your eyes, you still despise the same. Lies you heard the night before. And though it's just a line to you, for me it's true. Well, now it seems so right before. I practice every day to find some clever lines to say to make the meaning come true. But then I think I'll wait until the evening gets late and I'm alone. Write your perfume, fills my head, the stars get red and all the night's so blue. And then I go and spoil it.
by saying something stupid like I love you. Your perfume fills my head, the stars get red and all the nights so blue. And then I go and spoil it all by saying something stupid like I love you. I love you. I love you. I love you.
Saying something stupid like I love you, and who's been down that road. One of the things that's very interesting to me and that came across my mind today, I teach the law of attraction. And in the law of attraction, one of the principles is allowing. What allowing means is I let you be who you are while you let me be who I am. Appreciate those things I like about you most, while you appreciate those things that you like about me most. So it's allowing one person to be who they are. And in the beginning stage of falling in love, two people will come together and they'll overlook everything. In other words, the hunt is on. It's this is the person I want to be with. And I'm ready to overlook anything. I just want to be with this person. I just want to be loved, and I want this connection, and it's all about that. Then, after a period of time of having had the conquest of the hunt over, fallen in love, gone through the honeymoon phase, and sort of come out the other side, and all of a sudden, everybody starts looking at the things that they are to disagree on and the things that aren't in alignment. And the principle of allowing falls out the window. So it's naturally used in the beginning, yet later on during the relationship, it falls away and almost gets taken over by the negative things that you see about someone else. What can you add to this?
Well, I think that pattern is very predictable because I think most folks are recreating what they're familiar with. And the model for love that we receive early on from our parents is that of a conditional love. So what happens is, you know, the agreement when two people fall in love at first is, I adore you so long as you keep adoring me. And so it's not physically possible to provide someone with that much focus of attention and adoration in life on an ongoing, constant basis. I mean, we would not be able to function. We wouldn't be able to do anything else in life if that's all that we did. We wouldn't feed ourselves, we wouldn't sleep, we wouldn't work, we wouldn't do anything else to the object of our affections all the time. So what winds up happening is that I think as soon as folks pull away a little bit, that's when the conditions come in. And that's the model that we're familiar with. But in an intentional and conscious relationship, that's not how it works. In a relationship that is pursued in an intentional and aware way, we understand that we hold each other in affection, but we also practice allowing, which is very interesting to me because, you know, statistics seem to say that, you know, women get into relationships or commitment, and men get into relationships for freedom.
Really?
So, yeah, that's what they seem to be saying out there, you know, different studies and whatnot. And, you know, that really sounds like a conflict of interest to me. And it's a wonder that anyone really gets married with if that really is the reality. And, or if we don't become really adept at negotiating for either freedom or commitment.
Well, yeah, you know, in our relationship, one of the things that makes our relationship so strong is the fact that we do allow each other. We don't see eye to eye on everything in life. In other words, we're not looking 100% in the same direction on every single topic. I like science fiction movies and action movies, which not so much.
Not so much on the action side.
Right. And so, you know, if I want to, you know, escape for a little while and watch one of those movies, sometimes you'll say, you go ahead and do that, have fun, and I'll see you later. And there's no animosity towards it, so there's a little bit of a balance, which kind of makes things work. I don't enjoy being in the garden the whole time. And so quite often what I'll do is you're off in the garden, I'll find something else to do. I don't sort of, you know, try and occupy your time the whole time. But I've noticed in relationships with a lot of people, even in my past relationships, I've noticed it as well, is that there's this constant need for attention. And it becomes a quest that becomes resentful. And so you spend your life, you know, sort of looking at someone in a resentful manner, saying, you know what, it should be this way.
Or you owe me.
Right. And so at the end of the day, you get two people that are clearly in love. The word love has just been redefined. And sort of lost along the way. So what would you say to people who perhaps are in that position? What's a way to break that? What's a way to look at things differently, especially if you're in the rut of disagreeing the whole time?
Okay, well, I don't know if that is really love. What you're describing is this pattern of pursuing each other for attention is actually dependency to me. And that isn't what love really is about. If there is fear, trepidation, and insecurity that comes into play the moment that your lover steps away, then that's going to be difficult to define that as love.
But if love is something that redefines you as an individual, and it's that all-encompassing driving force behind your life. I mean, it was that thing that you wanted most. Why step away from it? What causes people to step away from love? Do they literally lose interest, or is love forgotten?
Well, it depends on whether you're looking to recreate the experience of you know, the adoration, the infatuation. This is very interesting because I had an experience when I reached 40 of being in love, but there was, to me, I was in a former marriage, and I had none of that in my experience at that point. And, you know, I think that what I was discovering was my love of life. But on a visceral level, it felt like I was falling in love, only there wasn't someone, a partner next to me that could return that. So what I want to share about that is that it is possible to have this experience about in your life, about life in general. You can fall in love with life in general. You can fall in love with any aspect of life. In other words, romance, exist in every facet of your experience if you choose to see it there. You can experience that even without having someone next to you. You can experience it without having someone adore you back. It is humanly possible to feel that way in general, but you know, you have to connect to your sense of well-being in order to recreate that experience, and you need to be able to be loving yourself.
So romance is one facet.
It's one facet
of love.
Yeah.
And if I hear you correctly, and putting it in words that only I can, Kessler had a fascination for frequency.
Mm-hmm.
And vibration.
Mm-hmm.
And so I focused all of his energy and time and passion and inspiration on that subject. In fact, he pretty much lived a loveless life in terms of being social or looking for a life partner. He made the choice to focus predominantly on his passion for life.
But that was his passion.
Correct.
So at the end of the day, he still had the opportunity to experience passion.
Well, nobody says that you have to have a partner
mm-hmm.
In order to experience love. And I'm going to jump across to the side because there are so many different people around the world where you can see love for what it is that they do. I really enjoy watching cooking shows. And one of the shows that I love to watch is Chef's Table. And the reason why I like to see that is because it hones in on one individual from some place in the world. It's always a different place. But it's about the passion that they have for what it is that they do and how far they explore that passion. And it's wonderful to see someone so in love with what it is that they do. And you get to see that love. So there's another facet of the word love, which means that, you know, you explore your personal passion, something that stimulates you, something that makes you want to jump out of bed and live life.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And I think that broadens the definition of love, or maybe the experience of love, because we limit ourselves when we think, you know, there has to be some crush standing next to us, someone that we're crushing on, and once that fades, then what? What do we do with our time? What do we do with our energy after that? It's a very one-dimensional way to experience life if we limit ourselves that way.
Right. And you know, I wanted to sort of break down the word love so that we could understand that it is multifaceted. And so what I want to bring in here is that as per universal law, oneness, love is essentially the component that we're born from. In other words, well-being.
Yeah.
So we come from a field of well-being into this physical world, and that's the utmost driving force within us beyond wanting to personally evolve. Which means from the time you're born, looking for personally evolving to become more, which is an understandable principle to go by.
Yeah.
It's the driving force. When somebody's evolving and becoming more, they're feeling better about themselves. So let's just step a little bit back into self-worth and how self-worth is perhaps the starting point for any type of love that you could have as a physical individual.
Okay, now this is very interesting when you bring this into the conversation because different traditions have different names for that. And, you know, we're not going to be talking on this show about, you know, the other side where society says, you know, you're too self-absorbed and that aspect of the conversation. We'll save that for another show. But for the purposes of this conversation, I think it's well worth investigating because in my conversations with folks, I talk about self-appreciation. We talk about self-compassion. And in some traditions, it's called grace, which is getting the opportunity to experience a level of love, unconditional, for every vulnerable and fragile part of ourselves. That if exposed to others, it wouldn't be safe. But in this place of self-compassion, in this place of worth, in this place of love and acceptance, in total acceptance, there is no judgment. There is only love. And, you know, that's what I believe I was experiencing when I hit 40. And that's also what I believe made it possible for me to meet you, because I didn't have to go out and seek a partner who appreciated me. I just became that. And I'm not quite sure all, you know, I can't explain the mechanics of all of that. I just knew that I felt a passion for life and that everything would be all right somehow. And I think that's what provided that attraction that ultimately brought you into a commitment.
Right. But you know, that's accepting yourself.
Yeah.
In other words, once you accept yourself, you're always open to the possibility of so much more happening.
Yeah.
And so much more potential for life. So as I said before earlier on the show, you know, the number one thing with humanity is the need for acceptance. The number one fear for humanity is the fear of rejection.
Yeah.
Now, what's interesting about rejection is when you don't feel accepted, and this is a personal thing.
Mm-hmm.
In other words, this is introspectively when you're looking at yourself. When you don't feel accepted, rhetoric starts in your mind where you start saying less to yourself. Maybe I'm not good. Maybe people don't like me. Maybe I'm ugly. Whatever it is, it goes through your mind. But what I want to point out here is that there's negative emotions attached to that form of thinking. So if you're looking at something that's based on fear, it has this pronounced negative emotional negative emotions attached to it. Now, if you look at love, it has emotions built to it. So we're talking about passion. We're talking about being inspired, being fulfilled. These are all positive emotions. And so for me, if I want to define love, I'm looking for those positive emotions. If there's a negative emotion in it, then somehow that love is a little bit skewed.
Yeah.
And we do know that love can be the cause of a lot of trouble.
Yes, yes.
And so if you look at the person that's struggling with love and you have a look at the amount of negative emotions that are attached to that story, you'll understand that they're not sitting in love at all.
Well, I agree with what you're saying, and one of my observations, you know, we always strive to offer unconditional love, but, you know, we can't do it 100% of the time, and there is fear that comes into play at times, and we all have our wounds of being rejected at one time or another. I mean, both you and I have had very difficult former marriages, and there are times when those wounds come to the surface, and we need to find ways to work on healing them. But you know, when we create an environment of safety, which is what I call an intentional thing or an intentional relationship, there is an opportunity for that to happen. That's creating that emotional safety that says it's okay to share your fears, because I won't take advantage of your vulnerability. And you can take your time working on these issues. And I'm not here to fix you, but I'm here to support you in any way that I can. And you know, but more importantly, to celebrate you and whatever victory you are reaching for outside of those moments. But I do think that cultivating a relationship, Dawn, safety net, because I think when we consciously offer each other that in a committed relationship, we get to experience both the devotion that a lot of us as women want, but also the freedom that a lot of men are seeking when we cultivate that.
Well, that's the foundation.
Yeah.
That's the foundation that holds everything together and literally stabilizes it.
Yeah.
Because it can have a natural flow. Let's take another short break and then go to a song, and we'll return to it shortly. in the endless sky, we all but one. And I love that from that song, because in the endless sky, meaning eternity, we're one, meaning we're all connected. Love that we come from is the most important aspect of our lives from a personal point of view. And when I say from a personal point of view, as individuals, we all differ slightly. Like I said, we're not the same. We share a lot of things that we really enjoy together, you and I, but we're not 100% the same in how we look at everything, how we sort of break everything apart, what we enjoy. We have differences, but the acceptance, like I have an acceptance for who you are as an individual and what you do, and you to me as well, is the freedom that you and I have in terms of enjoying this relationship.
Yeah. Okay, so we'll share a secret now. And one of the things that really worked very well for Paul and I, that I think very few couples practice, is that we give each other inordinate amounts of space to do our own thing. And I don't just mean that, you know, we're not like lovey-dovey talking all the time to each other. We actually give each other a substantial amount of space in the day to, for either of us to pursue the things that we find interesting. And we don't, you know, nag one another. We don't practice that as a lifestyle. We don't pound one another.
The word is suffocate.
Yes, okay. We don't suffocate one another. We give each other ample breathing room. And, you know, I think that's something that's lost on a lot of folks these days. You know, even with technology being what it is, we're almost like intravenously connected to one another. That defeats the whole. What makes life interesting to me is that at the end of the day or at different intervals in the day when he and I come together, you know, it's a privilege to hear what he's experienced from his perspective and how he sees things. And because we have given each other that ample space for free thought and activity and whatever, you know, like, it means the world to me when I get to, let's say, I do the gardening or I get to be out in nature, and I come back energized from those experiences. And he never once said to me, you know, I did at some intervals in my life have that. And, you know, I have been known to do things a little strange. I have gardened in the dark sometimes because I love it so much, and it's gone down on me, and I lose track of time. But Paul has never criticized me for that, and vice versa. I like when he takes his time, and I actually enjoy watching him really get into something and not interfering, because I can see his vibration increasing, and I can see his energy levels increasing. And it's nice. It's a wonderful experience. And when we do reconvene, so special.
Well, it's energized.
Yeah, and you have something to get from.
Yeah, it's energized. So either you want to decompress and just kind of cuddle and watch a movie or have a meal together or something. But it's the word. It has balance.
Mm.
And I think if anyone wants to live a fulfilled life, find balance. There needs to be a balance between everything. There's so many examples of where things are not balanced. And again, here's the trick, negative emotion seeps in. And the moment you see negative emotion, that's a signal that's telling you something's out of alignment with who you are.
Yes, but see, we're able to give each other that kind of space because we actually both enjoy our own company, and we feel secure in who we are as individuals. So there isn't going to be the sort of, I mean, 5 years now, we know each other's routines and rhythms and all of that. There isn't a need to cling in order to feel secure. So if you are solid in who you are and you appreciate who you are and you live in your worth, then you're not going to need to be clinging or chasing someone else to energize you or to refill you.
Well, there it is. For me, that's the crux of the whole issue, is that it begins with self-worth. Begins for a love for self.
Yeah.
In other words, an acceptance of self. This is who I am, and this is who I want to be.
Yeah.
And from there, everything responds according to that. And so if there's negative stuff coming to life, you know, you get to question how it is you're looking at yourself. For example, and we don't have time to go into the side of things, ego, but you know, if ego takes over. In terms of being too much of yourself. In other words, from an arrogant point of view, again, negative emotions seep in.
Mm-hmm.
And it seeps in from the outside. You know, people saying to you, oh my God, you're arrogant. Or something like that. But the self-worth that I'm talking about is not a profound love. It's an accepting love. And that's when you can look at yourself in the mirror and say, you know, I'm happy with who you are. With what it is that you're trying to do or achieve, you can't do it.
Yeah.
And get out there and enjoy life. So, you know, for me, it's a matter of not so much having to pursue love, but living it.
Living it. You know, you realize, honey, that we have, years ago, we almost met on the radio.
Yeah, we did.
A short time after we met, we took up a radio project. And here we are today on Valentine's Day talking about love with you. And we're sitting here by the fireplace. And it's been an incredible journey. It's been extremely rewarding. But it is possible to experience unconditional love. It is possible to experience an abiding love. Possible to bring this experience into your life, to attract a love that is fully accepting if you're willing to give yourself that first.
Right. Well, honey, thank you so much for joining me on the show. I appreciate having you here. Likewise to you, and happy Valentine's to everyone who's listening. What we want most for all our listeners, all our readers, all our friends is that you have a rich, love-filled life, no matter what that life is, and the only one that can choose is you. You get to determine what your life is all about. And often I say, reach for your dream. It's the dream that counts. In other words, if you're not reaching for the dream, that state of being, that person that you want to be, then you're not evolving. And so you always reach for more. From wherever you are, try and reach for more. We are happy to have had you here this evening. Thank you so much for listening. Those who want to tap into more on the topics of love, please go and visit the Facebook pages that we have. Do you want to rattle off a couple of them?
Yeah, I really think, you know, since today's topic was love and law of attraction and how to create these kinds of experiences for yourself, join us where we write in our private group, which is Holtzmit and the Law of Attraction. And we both write in that space, and you can gain a lot more insight, but certainly Holtzmit, author and speaker for one. And, you know, as well as Deliberate Rituals page where I show up as well. So, and you can Google either of us as well.
That's up from all of us. Good night. Love you lots. And we look forward to speaking with you again.
There's shone on me. I want my whole life to be lived with you. There's a way, everybody says, to do each and everything.
I ain't got you.